Accession number 26562, Mr. Ken Taylor, Reel 16. Now, you were just telling me about how you reached one crevasse, I think, or sort of carry on with that story.
Well, there was one part where the snow was very soft and we thought there might be crevasses there. So we, and the sledges were sinking, because we had these, so about 1,200 pounds load on these sledges, and we progressed that day. I think it took 8 hours to progress 1 mile. And we were virtually crawling on our bellies with stuff off the sledge in our arms, crawling forward and then coming back, crawling forward. And that was the worst thing. Because we were losing time, we actually sledged through blizzards, which under normal circumstances you wouldn't sledge. I ended up with, because I've got a bent nose, so there's not much, but always got frostbite on that side of me now.
I'll come back to that. Now, what were you wearing? We haven't done this yet.
Oh, well, the normal thing is mucklucks, which is a name for an Eskimo name for the boots. They're like a canvas boot with a composite sole, comes up just below the knee. Three pair of socks. A lot of the army stuff we had, they got their experience from Korea, with the coldness of Korea. And the socks are all numbered, 1, 2, and 3. So you put one on first, two on next, because it's slightly larger than three on. And then inside the mucklap, you had like a Fear Naught boot. In the bottom of the mucklap, you had a sole in your shoe if it's a bit loose and that sort of thing. Well, these had a soft top, but underneath was like a wire mesh. It was plastic, but it was like a wire mesh. And it's an amazing thing that, obviously, you've got to look after your feet like a soldier. Everything's got to be on your feet. So when you camp for the night, you had a chain to put the dogs on, and what you used to do was dig a hole, put a bit of wood in with a bit of rope, tie this chain, fit it in so that you had a long chain, and off it was individual chains for each dog. And then you get into the tent and you take your mucklap on. When you took this in or out, there was hoarfrost all inside this mesh on it, because the coldness underneath and the warmth on top. And this inner sort of piece of your shoe, you knock this out and you make. And in the top of the tent, there were the tents.
No, hang on, you've only got to your feet so far. Oh, the rest of you's naked.
Oh, sorry. It's cold. Long johns underneath, the normal long johns with a slit in the front, slit in the back, people wear. And then just like a lightweight windproof khaki, over the top. String vest on with an army type, thick army type shirt, the thick sort of shirts the army wear, not the sort of fine poplin ones, the thick ones. And then an anorak on top, which was the same material as the trousers, like a weatherproof. Now, the anoraks we had, the sleeve went wide under the armpit. The idea being for that if you get frostbite, you could, you don't rub frostbite because you just tear it all up. You could pull your arm inside and stick it on your warm breast, sort of to thaw out. So they were quite, so if you saw the arms on these, they were wide and went up and narrow out. And obviously gloves. Thick gloves. So you sort of
just one pair or layers of gloves.
Like the Air Force had in their bombers, a silky glove underneath and a thick glove on top, sort of thing. We normally had these on tapes around our shoulders so you couldn't lose them. You had a breast piece, and like kiddies have. Exactly the same as kiddies, so you couldn't lose them, so you took them off. I got, and of course, obviously, a cap that the old Russians wear. And you sort of, this is an interesting thing.
A bear skin tone?
Yeah, that's sort of, where you can pull the flaps down the side. Because that's something I learned there. The temperature of your body is controlled by your ears. And the amazing thing is, one of the most dangerous things in the Arctic is to sweat. Of course, you can sweat. If you're doing something energetic and you've got all these clothes on, and then you stand still, and you've got this sweat on you, and that freezes on your body. So, and something that you learn there, that as you feel yourself getting too warm, you just lift up your flaps, and your ears soon cool your body down, and you pull your flaps down, they're going to warm up again.
What about goggles?
Yeah, I had snow goggles. You know, we had what they call the Everest type, little tiny ones. You often see them, you know, sort of a narrowing by the nose, and they go out like a triangle to be, you know, the base of the triangles at the temple side. And we had also army ones, which were bigger goggles, like motorcyclist goggles. Yeah.
You wore one at a time? I mean,
oh, yeah, one at a time, yeah. I mean, sometimes you lift them, take them off, you know, but I mean, you put them back on again.
Now, you're saying about the tents. Can you describe the type? Did the tents have a name, or...?
Not that I know.
What were they like?
The base was square, and you had four poles, which went up to a point at the top. So the base was square. It was like a pyramid. It was a square base and the four poles, and they were double-skinned. In the top of the tent, you had a tape, like a little clothesline, which was in a square in the top of the tent. There was a little vent in the top of the tent, a little hole for a vent. The door was round, and you just, you know, with a draw cord, and you just pulled it tight and shut it. What I did in the tent...
Were they two-man tents or one-man?
Three. Well, we had three in a tent. The reason I was in a tent with Jim Simpson, the leader, Richard Hamilton, the chief scientist, and myself, is because, you know, things were going on the base. They were building the hut, getting everything sorted out, the stores sorted out, built, and we were on our way up the ice cap, and Jim had to be, you know, informed as to the progress. Also, the chief scientist, you know, he was an old expert in Arctic thing, any advice he could give. So I had the radio.
Now, I was going to ask you what equipment you were carrying. Which wireless did you have?
I had an Army Type 62, which I believe Paratroopers used. It's only a low power set, transmitter receiver, together with a 80 watt petrol generator.
And that was on
12 volt battery.
That went on the sledge,
obviously. Went on the sledge. 12 volt battery, petrol generator, transmitter receiver, coil of aerial wire. Now, what I used to do is, after we pitched the tent, I'd stick the radio between the outer and inner layer of the tent, because I didn't want it in the heat. Because once you got in that tent, with that primer's going, you got like an oven in there, which was handy because you used to hang your socks and your, you know, the bits and pieces up in the roof to dry off. I used to run the aerial up, push it out through the ventilator, and what I did, I'd stick a couple of skis in the ground at a distance, and had spare bootlaces, sort of your boots, and I should just tie this wire, no insulators or anything, just tie this wire to, because you're insulated from ground because you've got solid ice underneath, which is an insulator anyway. You could actually lay it on the ground, but I mean, you didn't lay it on the ground because anybody tramping around in my career. So that was it, just a wire run back along on the ski. I should lift the inner wall up to tune it, and this is where I got frostbitten on all my fingers.
I'll come back to the frostbite, yeah. So did the 62 set work well? I mean, was it reliable? And the generator,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it worked well, and worked the base continuously. We had a schedule every night when we, you know, given time with the base. Obviously we got reports as well. I had, at one time on that slip, my youngest brother's first child, a daughter, was born, and that was in the September, and they'd sent a radio telegram up, and that was sent to me over the radio. So I always remember her birthday was in 1952.
So that was the sort of message, reporting in to say how things were going.
They want advice, and and obviously the leader would ask questions about different things, if any problem, and obviously they were in touch with London. Because Admiralty Wireless did all the communication with the base, you see.
Now, what about these frostbite problems? You've mentioned two so far, your nose and your fingers. Tell us about them.
Well, one side of my nose frostbitten, because my nose sort of, I suppose it's not very good circulation in one side, because it is a bit bent. I've got high cheekbones, and my cheekbones used to always get frostbite. And because I had to, you know, this radio, I'd been on the sledge all the time, didn't warm up, and you had to sort of make sure the tuning was right, tune it up, and I sort of used to just lift the inside one and tune it up originally, and then I used to leave the Morse key and the microphone, if I'd used the microphone, and the headphones under the bottom of the tent. Because what you used to do when you put the tent down, you pile snow on, it had a flap at the bottom, you just pile snow all around so it was sealed up. And so I got frostbite on all my fingers.
Now, how badly? There's different degrees.
Yeah, well, it was quite bad. I couldn't touch anything with my fingers. And I had to, I'll get my leg pulled about this, I had to send Morse with my knuckle. Thump with my knuckle. And I get comments now saying, you still do.
The old ham-fisted.
Yeah.
So that was it painful, frostbite, at the time, or was it just...
Well, to touch it, I mean, I used to sort of pull my hand up inside to try and warm my nose up, sort of inside my anorak to warm my nose up, and my cheeks up to sort of keep it down. So it never got that serious, but it was something I always got. And funny enough, for years and years and years after I come back from Greenland, every time I was out in the sun, I'd get a sore from the sun on that nose. And it's only in about the last 15 years, I suppose, that hasn't happened. It's got immune to it, I think. But always very careful. That side of my nose always got a sore from the sun.
Now, what about food? You know, and how often would you eat it? Or was it just once a day? I mean...
If I remember rightly, your food, breakfast... we had, like, our plates were plastic, like a blue plastic, a pale blue plastic, and it was like a soup plate. And you used to have a plate of porridge for breakfast in the morning.
Now, how did you cook it?
You got snow, and this is one thing with weight, that's why you never washed, because, as you know, it takes a hell of a lot of snow to get a little water. And, of course, you know, your paraffin primer stoves and methylated spirits for starting the primer stoves. I mean, all weights, you see, you have to keep this down. So that's why you never wash clean your teeth.
I'll come back to that. Yeah. Stick to the cooking.
So we used to cook the porridge in the little billy can in the morning. Now, our ration was we had... a plate of porridge in the morning, plate of pemmican at night, and I say pemmican is like a large oxide cube. You just cut it up with your sheath knife, because we all had sheath knives. Cut out the sheath knife, just put it in water, and it's just like brown porridge, porridge in the morning, and like a bread. When I first had it, it got quite sickly. It was rather rich. You had, I think, about 15 biscuits a day. And these were very sort of fatty, they were thick biscuit, square biscuits, but quite rich in fat, I think. Loads of butter, you used smarm butter on, you had quite a lot of butter. 21 cubes of sugar, and a small portion of chocolate, about half a bar of chocolate a day was your, the chocolate you used to eat while you were sledging. But you never used to. We had cocoa. Cocoa was a drink. So what we used to do, when we did the breakfast in the morning, we used to make some cocoa and put in a flask. Because then we'd stop about lunch. Because the lady would take, he had a sextant. The actual fact, it was the RAF type sextant, the bubble sextant the RAF use. Not a sea sextant, because we're climbing. Where we ended up was 10,000 feet above sea level on the ice cap. We used to have to stop so you could take a sunset. And when we did, then sometimes you could eat your chocolates with sledging along, perhaps break a piece off and have it, or sometimes sugar. Some of them used to have a lump of sugar as they were sledging.
And when you say sledging, you're walking by the sledge.
You're walking by the sledge, yeah, all the time.
And I'm just making sure that, because it sounds like you're on the sledge, but you're not.
At times, when you're going up the glacis, you're heaving and pushing and shoving and pulling.
So that, so you'd stop, you'd have a bit of cocoa chocolate in the day. Now, what about in the evening? Would you cook again, or?
Yeah, it was your pemmican.
Yeah. And that was your main meal?
Main meal, that was your pemmican. And you had these biscuits, you see, so you could either, you know, put a lot of butter on them. You put a lot of butter on them because, you know, you took in a lot of fat all the time.
So not much variety in food?
No variety in it. They had... this is one of the things in the book, when I was having a quick glance through, reminded me that, because this is a basic sledge riding, you've got to keep your weight down. Once we started getting the air drop on the ice cap, we got the luxury boxes dropped, and there's curry powder in there and raisins, so you can put some raisins and curry powder in your pemmican and things like that, you see. What they called luxury boxes, and they had different colours on them, so you knew what they were, you see.
Well, we'll perhaps come back.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you mentioned washing. Washing, shaving, toilet. Talk a bit about washing and shaving? You obviously didn't.
No washing, no shaving. No washing, no shaving, nothing like that. No cleaning teeth.
And that's just because no water?
Well, I mean, you know. And another thing, you want the oil on your body. I found, I did experiments while I was there, and... I'd have a bath of sorts, clean myself down, and you were cold. Clean clothes, filthy body, and you were warm because you had all the grease on your body. But your clothes had to be clean, and obviously several layers of clothing. You know, there's the old secret, several layers of clothing, not just one big thick one. We did have white submarine jerseys as well we could put on if it was extra cold. You know, I'd said before we had the string vest, army shirt, and anorak, but we could also put on the yellow. We had the old white submariners jerseys. Now the toiletries.
Because that must have been a problem.
In the morning, what we used to do after we'd had our breakfast and we got everything packed up, we'd have a toilet in the tent, and this was, you know, when you can appreciate now why you get all these interviews when you go about sort of. You know, when you've got three blokes in the tent dropping their trousers, and Jim Simpson was the leader, he was always pushing his bum in my face. he'd be turning around looking for the paper, and you know, I'd be sitting there like this. So that was it. In the day, this to start with could be quite embarrassing, because if you're going along you wanted to have a wee, well, you know, you just... tell it, oh, and they stop, and you just stand where you were and have a wee, sort of thing, you see. But if you wanted to have a sit me down, you just walked away a bit, you know, and everybody stood there, and there's nothing around, just completely open, like, see. And you'd have a sit me down. Now, the embarrassing thing was not the men, because, I mean, they'd be talking, I mean, they didn't want to see you, what you was doing, I mean, they'd be chatting amongst themselves. The dogs. The dogs all used to turn, once you stopped sleeping, the dogs would all sit down, but they'd turn towards you and watch you, and their mouths used to dribble. And the thing was, the dogs used to eat it. And I checked with the doctor on this, he said, oh yes, he said, what we get rid of, he said, it's got a lot of goodness and a lot of fats in that the dogs would want. He said, although our bodies reject it because it's not... But that was the embarrassing thing. 36 dogs all looking at you with their mouths dribbling.
Now, can you describe, perhaps I should have done this first, but can you describe the terrain you were going across? When, as you started to go up and, you know, you're going across, what would it look like? What was it?
Well, I mean, at the very beginning, going up the glacier, now, we'd never been up there before, and we took, they found out later there was an easier route, but we took a very, very rough route going up the glacier.
Now, this is the glacier you call...
Unicorn Glacier. Before we started, they had to do man packing to take the stuff up, because the base hut, there was a lot of moraine and ground before you got to the glacier, so everybody took turn. We had big packs, 60 odd. I remember Angus Erskine was carrying a pack 85 pounds. It Sherpas only carry 60, and carrying packs up, dumping it all out there, and I had to get the sledges up there as well, carry them as well, to get to the edge, you know, of the glacier. And at that time, you see, the glacier, the surface of the glacier is melting. and you've got a lot of ice water streams. You get all these, you know, I always think of glaciers is like a rough sea that's frozen. There's all dips and bumps and that. And also, you've got these meltwater streams. Or some of them you could just push across, you'd unload the sledge, push the sledge across to act as a bridge, and then walk across it and hand the stuff over. Other times you had to wade through this, and sometimes you were wading up to your waist in freezing ice cold water. And you had to keep walking and keep on the move, you know, otherwise that was, you know, so the outside froze. So that wasn't very pleasant. I always remember as you got into it, and the water's coming up your legs, getting higher and higher and higher, you tend to get on your toes open. then you get on the edge of the ice cap, and I'll show you, once you get on the edge of the ice cap, the temperature tend, you know, you could say there was a drop of about 50 degrees.
Now, what was it like on top? That's when you got to the top of the glacier, you'd be on the ice.
Just nothing but white. Now, to start with, after we've been on the ice for a while, we come across nunataks. Now, nunataks is the Eskimo name for the top of a mountain sticking up through the ice. And they're only small. We got them to do us an airdrop there. Still to do an airdrop for, you know, after we got to the rough of the glacier. And Mike Banks stuck a bottle of rum in my sleeping bag. And he put it in the sleeping bag wrapped up. Because, you know, we left behind what we didn't need for getting up, because we were up the glacier in one day. But it broke. So I had a sleeping bag full of broken glass and stunk of rum for the rest of the trip. But nothing to drink.
So the terrain, it was just basically open on the ice pack with these little mountains.
Well, only to start with. Once you get started, there's nothing. It's just plain white. And you're steadily climbing all the time. Because Greenland itself, so they told me, is shaped like a sausage, like a bit. All around the side, you've got the coastal region. Then under the ice cap, it's scooped down. So Greenland's like a saucer. In actual fact, the rest of it, and you imagine pouring sugar into a saucer, and if the saucer's got sort of ribbed edges in places, that sugar would spill through those edges, and that's where the glaciers come, you see. And so it's higher in the middle and goes down. The one thing that steadily climbing all the time, I found I had to adjust the carburetor on my petrol generator because the air was getting more rarefied. And I twigged this, I thought, you know, it's not working. Because it's a very, very simple petrol engine, so no problem, it's just a case of turning a little knob. But I steadily had to sort of change the adjustment on the carburetor because the air was getting rarer.
What effect did it have on you, though? I mean, did you find things were getting tougher? I mean, it's supposed to be harder work when you get a higher altitude.
Well, it's hard work in the cold anyway. The hardest thing to get used to is, A, you can't do things, shall we say, as quickly as you did, you know, like here. Like picking up a hammer and using it. You don't grip it tight. Because you grip it tight, you take the blood out of your fingers and you get frostbite. You're holding it loose. You don't get through as much work as quickly when you're sort of on these cold climbs. You know, sort of using spanners, using hammers, anything. You get frustrated to start with because you know what you can do and you can't do it. But you get used to adapting to those conditions.
But you didn't find yourself getting tired more easily because of the rarefied air. Cold was more of a problem.
Yeah, the cold was a problem. And, I mean,
you weren't getting breathless or anything.
Always look forward to getting in the tent because, you know, you sort of, after the end of the day, you had to get the dogs pegged out and feed them.
Now, what did that mean? Tell me about pegging the dogs out and feeding.
Well, basically, what you used to do is get a couple of bits of wood and dig a hole so the wood, you know, and we had the chain, the long chain, with little chains coming off for each individual dog. And you just, with a bit of rope, you tied the chain to the bit of wood and buried it in a hole so it was like a little anchor each end. And so all the dogs were in their own team separate. And give them their pemmican, just chuck the block at them and they chew it away.
What about water? I mean, I know they're surrounded by snow, but...
That's what they have, they're just over snow. Yeah, just scoop it up. As you see, the dogs don't do it, so they're running, they can't grab the snow, yeah.
Now, what is the point of all this? Where are you going? Do you see what I mean?
Well, we're going to a position in the pre-range position in the ice cap to set up a Met station and also a depot for these weasels that's doing these surveys across the ice cap. So you've got a food depot, fuel depot.
Now, did this food depot have a name? Or the station?
North Ice. They called it North Ice.
North Ice.
All one word, North Ice.
And you were you starting the process, or were you setting? I mean, you wouldn't be carrying enough to set up a depot. You just
no. We're getting an airdrop from Transport Command. So, what happened was, we got delayed by this bad bit of where we only did 1 mile in 8 hours, and then we had to press on through blizzards, which normally.
Well, we haven't done that. That's my fault. Yeah. Tell me about what was it like in a blizzard?
Terrible, because you know it's really biting into you and everything. And the dogs also. I mean, we lost a couple of dogs. You know, because they're going in. I mean, they got their goggles and things like that. You see,
Is it driving? Is it just wind, or is it driving snow? What are they like?
Driving snow, because you're blowing the snow off the ice. And there's not so much precipitation out there as driving snow, really. I remember rightly, get to the original target, but we decided we were near enough to where we said we were going, and we pitched camp and then sent a signal to say where we were. And they did star sights and that sort of thing, because the coastal command were at an airbase, American airbase in Tula. T-H-U-L-E, Tula. People call it Thule, but it's Tula. And the northwest coast of Greenland, because they've got a fighter base there. Typical Yanks, all centrally heated, everything underground, never come out in the open, except when they got their aeroplanes.
Now, what was this airdrop like? What were they dropping?
Well, dropping the hut to start with, because we had a little hut, quite small. But then we had everything. I can't remember the order stuff was arranged. There was stuff coming down by a parachute. They were doing free drops at about 50 feet. Fantastic. Rolling the petrol drums out and that sort of thing, and other things that didn't break. These Hastings were coming out continuously doing these drops. And then one day, the leader said to me, "Are you? Because he was outside."